Welcome to another episode of Scientology Fair Game.
Off to a roaring start today.
Yep.
Hi Leah.
Hi, honey. Once again, we call them the OGs.
Yes.
We have an OG on. Mark Headley, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on again. Thank you for answering
but
the
I've
call.
I've never been on the podcast before. This is the first time.
No, meaning like you consistently answer the call to me, to Mike, to anybody who needs you, you and your wife, Claire. I mean, it's just, anyway, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, so again, we've told your story on the aftermath and you've been on several times and Mike could put up those links. But let's dive into your story. Let's dive into your Scientology story. You were you got into Scientology when you were six. Your mother joined in 1979. You went to the Apple School as a kid, which is a Scientology school.
Yeah, in Hollywood. Well,
if you can call it that.
Well, yeah. A Scientology, I don't know, really. It was just
child
kind
care
of a
facility with added study tech.
Yeah. It was
you learned Scientology as a kid for your education.
Yes, exactly. Basically. That's the best way to say it.
Yes. And I was writing an article about this. I was doing an interview and I keep having to add to it because as you know, Scientology is not an easy subject to cover in a tweet, even in a show for 3 years and a podcast. I mean, we're always running out of time, but Mark, it's funny. I was writing, because one of the questions the interviewer asked was, you know, why are you so consistent? Why are you always shocked at Scientologist behavior of Fair Game? And, in going to therapy and reading books on the subject, you know, Scientology, once your parents are Scientologists, they cease to be your parents. And I'm just talking about parishioners. It's everything is referring to L. Ron Hubbard's technology. Your parents can't think for themselves. As soon as they become Scientologists, they literally stop thinking for themselves.
That's it's totally true. And actually, when I was a kid, my mom, if something happened or if I misbehaved, she would get out one of these green volumes. Like a
Scientology book.
Yeah, it was called I called them the green books when I was a kid, but whenever anything would happen, she would grab one of these green Scientology books, and then she would quote from that, like basically what I did wrong and how it was wrong and then what I would need to do. And I had so much resentment for Scientology growing up. Like, can't you just have a conversation with me? And finally, it came, I think I was about 14, and I said, every time you talk to me, you have to talk out of one of those green books. And I actually ended up moving out of the house at 14 because I just couldn't take it anymore.
And where did you go?
I actually went and lived with some of my friends that went to Delphi.
Other Scientologists.
Other Scientology families that would take me in. And my dad had moved to Nebraska by this point, so I couldn't go live with him. And that's
now, hang on a second. Is that because your dad wasn't a Scientologist?
No, my dad was never a Scientologist. We actually lived in Hollywood, right across from the Celebrity Center, which is that big castle in at Hollywood and Bronson, Franklin and Bronson.
Yeah.
And we lived in an apartment building right across the street from that. And my mom lived in the apartment building and my dad lived in the apartment building, but in separate apartments.
Oh, they weren't together.
Yeah, they didn't. They were divorced.
Right. Yeah.
When we moved to California in 1979, my mom very quickly got into Scientology. And I think at some point she gave him the ultimatum. Well, if you are not going to do Scientology, then we're going to get divorced. And he was like, well, I guess we're getting divorced then. So, and that sort of was the kind of baseline that Scientology had to do with my parents breaking up, and it had to do with me going to all these shitty schools. And we mentioned Apple School later on. I went to Delphi, which is another Scientology school. And basically, when I moved out when I was 14, I lived with these other families. And then my mom and I never really had a good relationship when she kind of joined Scientology and broke up with my dad. I don't think I ever kind of got over that.
Of course.
And my dad was always cool. He was always, I mean, he worked hard. He did what he could, but it was always like, well, he's not as good as he could be. And my mom started telling stories like he got electroshocked when he was a kid, and that's why he can't be in Scientology. And I was just like, and I never even brought any of this up to my dad. I was just like, whatever, sounds like a bunch of nonsense. And I was like, she's just third partying my dad, which is kind of like a Scientology thing where if there's any conflict, there's this third party
entity that
is creating the mischief or the rumors or whatever, trying to, you know, make a stir up some trouble.
Right.
But
your dad, he kind of resigned to the fact that he just had no jurisdiction over you, or
yeah,
that's the wrong word.
My sister and I have a sister as well, and she's also was in Scientology and went to the same schools. And he basically knew that he had to play along to get along. If he said anything bad about Scientology, then he knew he would lose contact with us.
But you said you weren't allowed to move with your dad. Why was that? Your mom had obviously custody of you and your sister, or?
He moved to Nebraska, and I went to school and lived and all my friends, and I wasn't just going to up and move off to Nebraska. That was sort of like, whoa.
Now, even though you had this kind of well-deserved disdain for Scientology, it already broke up your family. You still joined what's called the C organization, which is the part of Scientology where you give up your life. You live, eat, and work communally. And
so that was bamboozle. I didn't sign up for what I was doing. I signed up for something else and I got bamboozled. So I was basically moved out when I was 14. I was living with a girl that went to school that went to Delphi and her family, and her mother and father got recruited for the Sea Org while I was living with them.
Wow.
So then I had to move out of their house. So then I moved in with another lady that was a teacher at Delphi. And then I also began doing what's called a work study program at Delphi because my dad and mom stopped paying for my schooling. So I was paying for my school. Delphi is an expensive school to go to. I think it's about, back then it was about $500 a month, which is, I think, is probably still a lot. But I was paying for my own schooling and then working at the school. And I was a soccer instructor and I was helping out with whatever I could. I was actually the person who was in charge of getting the teachers to do their courses to learn how to be better teachers. And a group of recruiters came from a Sea Org facility called Able International, which is the Association for Better Living and Education. And they are a Sea Org unit, which is these billion-year contract Sea Org members from Scientology. And they run the front groups for Scientology, which is Narconon, Criminon, Applied Scholastics, and the Way to Happiness Foundation. And they came and said that I could work at a Narconon in Oklahoma and that I would be getting minimum wage. I wouldn't have to finish school.
Right.
And that I could help people get off drugs. So here I am. By this time I'm 15. I'm paying for rent, food, trying to figure out how to get to school every day. I'm trying to hustle and do side gigs and other things to make money so I don't have to just eat ramen and bologna for every meal. And these guys come along and say, you can get all up out of here. Don't have to finish school. You can go to Oklahoma, start making minimum wage, and we'll cover your boarding and all this other stuff. And I thought, that sounds like what I need right now because I'm really struggling at 15 to pay rent and pay school and everything else.
Yeah.
And so I joined the Sea Org because there was going to be a Sea Org team that was going to go out to Narconon and run the Narconon and take over for these people that were basically not doing too good on running a Narconon.
Right.
And so after about 2 weeks in the Sea Org, I realized probably not going to end up at Narconon. Because you read about in the Sea Org, one of the first things they teach you is you're going to go wherever we tell you to go. And you're going to do whatever we tell you to do.
And I just wanted to, your mother had to sign papers that basically handed over her rights as a parent to Scientology and the Sea Org, right? So she had no parental rights at this point.
Yeah, and oddly enough, that was the first time I actually felt like she was proud of me.
Wow.
Like when she got to have nothing to do with me anymore. Like, this is the best decision you could be making. I'm so proud of you. Finally, you're going to be a real Scientologist. And I was just like, really? Okay. Now you have no responsibility for me whatsoever, and now you're happy. So anyway, so I start working at the Sea Org, and I start actually working at Able International, which is on Hollywood Boulevard. It's the big building at 6331 Hollywood Boulevard. And of course, I'm not going to Narconon. I find that's like the first thing they tell you is that I'm actually, not only am I not going to go to Narconon, but I'm going to become the vice president for personnel for Able International. So that's like an executive posting. I've been in the Sea Org exactly 1 hour, and I'm actually going to be in charge of recruiting new people for the Sea Org, at this Sea Org facility on Holly Boulevard.
Yeah.
And so I ended up doing that for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. I failed horribly. I tried to recruit every single person that I knew at Delphi. I tried to recruit anybody and everybody that I knew. I tried to recruit. And I wrote a lot of letters to just the files and all that good stuff. And the one person I got into the Sea Org was my sister from Delphi.
Oh, wow.
And I immediately made her the what's called the COPE officer, which is kind of like the junior to the guy who's in charge of recruiting everybody. It's the one person under him. Made her write all the letters and do all the recruitment and all the stuff I didn't want to do. And then I ended up getting busted off of that because I didn't recruit anybody else. And then they made me the vice president for the finance division for the Treasury Department. So I got actually like I got what's called a committee of evidence, which is kind of like a justice action within Scientology. And
Their arbitration?
Yes, the arbitration.
Their official Scientology arbitration procedure.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
Which, by the way, is very arbitrary. I don't know if those words have any...
It's so arbitrary, it doesn't exist.
Yeah,
arbitration in Scientology.
It could be based on the way the wind is blowing past David Miscavige that day. It could depend on what the results are.
But wait, Mark, I want to ask you just a few questions.
Yeah.
During your time in the Sea Org, I mean, what are we talking about? You're 15 years old. You're living in a dorm with grown men or, you know.
I was living in a dorm with a guy named Dick Story. And Dick Story was one of the original Guardians Office members. Mm-hmm. And he's mentioned in a lot of the Guardians Office documents when the Scientology perpetrated the largest infiltration into the United States government in its history. He was... I think his post was like assistant guardian or something like that.
He was in the intelligence bureau, the the invest, the dirty tricks department.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
So he was my roommate when I got into Scientology. And he worked at Able because a lot of, and this is a thing that I didn't know until I got into Able as well, is that when the Guardian's office got busted, they had all these people that worked for them, and part of the agreement or whatever, the plea or however the court system worked it out and dealt out the punishment to Scientology, they said these Guardians Office people can't work in Scientology anymore because they're criminals, or Scientology kind of threw them under the bus to say they don't work in Scientology anymore.
That's actually what happened. There was nothing from the government. This was PR solution to the problem of how do you have all these guys that got sent to prison that were good Scientologists at the top of Scientology? Oh, we don't have them anymore. We threw them all out.
Yeah. So when I got to Able, I found out that all these Guardians office members became the staff members for all these front groups. So because the Able International actually used to be a department of the Guardians office, which was called SOCO, Social Coordination. So all of these people that were in the Guardians office that were infiltrating the government and doing all these dirty tricks. Well, guess what? There's a guy by the name of Henning Helt. He's actually one of the people, I think he went to jail, or he was one of the named co-conspirators. Guess what? He was the headmaster of Delphi. Mm-hmm. He was my headmaster at Delphi.
Yeah, they just reassigned the criminals to other.
Yeah. So yeah, he wasn't working in Scientology. Legitimately.
He was working for Scientology. He was working for the.
He was working for their school front groups. Yes. Not on paper. The Scientology church or whatever you want to call it. Either way.
Yeah, but Mark, let's make sure people understand. Able International is absolutely part of the Scientology quote church. Able 100%. International is a C organization outfit that, as you say, was headquartered at 6331 Hollywood Boulevard, the Hollywood Guarantee Building, home of David Miscavige.
Yeah, exactly. The same building that RTC is located in.
And the head of Able International was Laurie Zern, and Laurie Zern was the former Deputy Guardian United States.
Yes.
And the president of Able International was Rena Weinberg, the infamous B1, meaning Dirty Tricks Department agent.
South Africa.
From South Africa.
Yeah.
The place was a who's who.
It was a who's who of the Dirty Tricks people were the people that, by the way, were the most ethical people on the planet. Here's all your coworkers. It was literally like, these are the guys you're working with. And then I found out there's a guy by the name of Kendrick Moxon, who's a Scientology lawyer, and he's also a named unindicted co-conspirator in the infiltration of the United States government. And his wife, Carla, was a teacher at Delphi. So once you start making all the connections, Delphi was basically all the rejects from the Guardian's office. That's where they went to work. And in fact, the guy who founded Delphi in Oregon is declared SP at this point. But so they have all kinds of – Delphi's got all kinds of ties to Scientology. If anybody tells you Delphi is not a Scientology school, it is 100% through and through a Scientology school.
It is also now the biggest source of new recruits into the Sea Org in the United States.
Yeah.
They have a hard time finding anybody in the United States who will now join the Sea Org. Mostly, if they get them, from like South America or Central America or Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
But in the United States, Delphi is the biggest source because it is primarily children of Scientologists.
Yeah.
So the Sea Org recruiters hang out there all day, every day, pounding on people. It's how Christy got into the Sea Org. She was recruited from Delphi. So, yeah.
It's also, it's a usual suspects list even now when you, like, you go to the Danny Masterson thing and you say, well, there's this girl who was Danny Masterson's interrogator or the person who oversaw his interrogations. And let's get a hold of her. What's her name? Her name's Angie LeClaire. Angie LeClaire was the very first graduate of Delphi, Los Angeles. So it's when all these people that kind of went into the Sea Org in the 90s and in the 2000s, they're parents of Scientologists or children of Scientologists, and in a lot of cases, they're students from Delphi. When you get into the Sea Org, if you're like a new Scientologist and you join the Sea Organization, you have to do all the indoctrination that you would have to do to become a Sea Org member, and there's all these different courses and all this different training that you have to do. When I joined the Sea Org, the indoctrination period took 2 weeks, where sometimes it could take people 2 months. It took 2 weeks for me because I'd already done all of the indoctrination while at Delphi.
Right. Wow.
For the C word.
Right. Right. Of course. Yes.
So, but,
and to your guys' point, I mean, parents, Scientology parents are just really quick to hand over their children to the C word. But even before that, as I was mentioning at the top of the podcast, was your parents cease to become your parents as soon as they begin to be Scientologists. They don't think for themselves. They don't. Everything is about what does L. Ron Hubbard say, pulling out the books, reading this to your children verbatim, having your children follow these things verbatim. But even past that, even past just the what would LRH say and what does L. Ron Hubbard tell me to do, they start sending their children to Scientology organizations that are run by Sea Org members. Now, Sea Org members are dressed in military uniforms. They are set up as the most ethical beings on the planet. They're the only hope for mankind. And these are the men and women who your children are being sent to for confessing that they stole something or being promiscuous. Scientology parents send their children to the Sea Org.
Yeah.
And these men and women, and by the way, children running the Sea Org are in these military uniforms with epaulets. I mean, the lanyards, they have a formidable presence that as a child, you're petrified. You're, oh my God, my parents kowtow to these people. So they must be really powerful. And there's all these posters up of Sea Org members in military uniforms and military hats. And it says, we're the only hope mankind has, and we're the only ones doing anything about it. And they set themselves up as your primary caretaker.
Totally.
And so the reason I bring this up continuously is because we continue to be asked, why did you stay? And why are you shocked by the behavior of Scientology and Scientologists, even your own parents, when they do hate videos about you, lie, break the law? You know, all of this is shocking to us because we know we're telling the truth, but also because as children and into adulthood, I mean, adults are being handled by Sea Org members. I mean, if you're a Scientologist, you are reporting to the Sea Org, you are given, you know, well, this is what's going on at work. You have a Sea Org member sitting across from you going, this is what you need to do. Oh, my husband wants my children. This is what you need to do. Oh, this going on, that's going on. This is what you need to do. They're dictating your life. Grown men and women don't know how to think for themselves. And that is why, in a lot of cases, the children pick Scientology or the parents pick Scientology over their own family because that is their primary caretaker.
Totally.
Whether or not they're abusive or not, those who've been in abusive relationships or have parents that were abusive, most will protect their abuser.
Yeah. No, it's totally
because
true.
That's their primary caretaker, and that's what we all did. And so you growing up in this environment and being sent a clear message, as we all were, that Scientology took precedence over being a parent and protecting you, Mark, this makes sense why you would join the Sea Org at 15 and remain in the Sea Org for most of your adult life. Just same with Mike, same with me, you know, as a Scientologist, like it makes sense why we made
that's all I ever knew.
That's was your primary caretaker. Right. Yeah. And why it's easy to walk away from your parents and your husband and your wife is because you really don't have a bond with your parents as you do with Scientology who take over being your parents.
When I joined at 15, they said, well, you're still going to have to go to school until you're 16 because it's not legal for you just to not go to school.
Right.
And so, but then as soon as I got to the Sea Org, they were like, well, were you working inside the Hollywood Guarantee building? Who's going to know you're not at school?
And that's the thing. People ask us that all the time. Like, why are parents, why isn't anybody reporting these kids being abused? Why is nobody reporting that these kids are not getting an education or go, who's
everyone's
reporting
in
it?
On it. Yeah, everyone's
the Scientology
in on it.
Parents is in total agreement with how you're being raised. And if you called your mom and said, Mom, I'm not eating, or, you know, this is illegal, I'm working from 8 a.m. till midnight.
Well, I was so naive. So the first week I'm there working at Able, I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm supposed to go to school like once or twice a week. Like maybe I think at some point someone said, yeah, you could just go to school on the weekends. Like you work on post during the week. And then on Saturday and Sunday, you'll go off to school. Mm-hmm. And then Saturday came along and I was like, am I supposed to do like the school thing? And I think it was actually, it might've been Rena. No, it was actually this girl named Veronica Kegel. She was the person who was over my area. And she said, listen, you're like 15 and a half or whatever it is. By the time anyone figures out you're not in school, you're not going to need to go to school. So I never went to one day of school once I joined the Sea Org.
True with most Sea Org children.
Yeah, it was and there were tons of other kids there that worked at what we call it the HGB, the Hollywood Guarantee Building. And it houses, I think it might have housed like 8 or 9 different Scientology organizations, and we all had different schedules and we worked for different people, but we were all coming in at 8 o'clock in the morning and we were all leaving at midnight. And, and there was probably, I don't know, several hundred people that worked in that building. And if you worked in that building, you were a Sea Org member, no matter what. And there was a few people at that time. And this was my case as well for Able. And for another group called WISE, which is the Worldwide Institute of Scientology Enterprises. And that's sort of like a front group for getting chiropractors and dentists and sort of business people kind of bamboozled into Scientology so that they can, use Scientology in their business practice or whatever.
Right.
So Able and WISE were getting paid minimum wage. So most Sea Org members were making like $30 to $40 a week at that time. But if you worked at Able or you worked at WISE, you had to get minimum wage because they, at the time, this was in 1989, 1990, they were trying to get tax exemption from the IRS. And so if you worked at Able or WISE, technically those weren't Scientology. Those were these secular, I don't remember what they called it, but they called it they were Social Betterment Corporations, was what Able was running. Mm-hmm. And WISE was a business activity that had nothing to do with Scientology on paper.
On paper, right.
Yeah, so we had to get minimum wage. And I thought, well, damn, I'm working 110 hours a week. I'm going to get loaded. And they're like, well, no, we're only going to pay you for 40 hours. And I'm like, well, I mean, if you're going to follow the rules to follow the rules, let's follow the 110 hour part, you know?
I'm going to assume that didn't happen, Mark.
No, I got 40, but this is even the better part is that for a long time, we were getting the 40 hours a week, but then they figured out, well, you guys are getting too much money. So now we're going to make you pay for your food. And then we're going to make you pay for the birthing where we lived, the apartment that we lived in. And then that way, that would kind of take us down a peg.
You mean the Scientology-owned building?
Yes, we would have to pay. Oh, okay. We would actually pay the Scientology organization that fed us. We'd have to pay them money. Uh-huh. And then we'd have to pay the Scientology, whoever was paying the rent for the apartment we lived in. We'd have to pay that to them so that they could then pay the rent to the apartment building. And we still had some money left over, and eventually I was just like, well, I'm not paying you guys for food because your food sucks. I'm going to go down to Sandy Burger on Hollywood Boulevard for lunch. And
well, it sounds like you had a great life, Mark. The way you're setting it up, it sounds amazing. I mean, you had money in your pocket.
I'm leading up to the punchline.
Oh, okay.
So then, when I became the Treasury Secretary, the Vice President for Treasury, they were like, when you pay everybody this week, you just need to get them to sign the checks. Mm-hmm. So you write them checks and then you have them sign them and then you just deposit it back into the bank account. And I was
So
would write them their payroll check for the minimum wage.
Okay.
And then I would get them to endorse the checks and then take the checks back from them. So I would literally give you a check saying, here, Leah, here's your check for the week. go ahead and sign the back of it and give it back to me because I'm going to go redeposit that back into the bank.
And then what's the response of Sea Org members when they were being asked?
They were like, they basically told me to go fuck myself, most of them. They were like, you know, that ain't going to happen. And I said, well, listen, it's an order. It's come down from the top. You got to do it. And probably 80% of them did it. But when I got to the bank with those checks, the teller at the bank was like, you can't do this. And I was like, what? She's like, yeah, this is super illegal. You can't write somebody a payroll check and then have all of them endorse it and then come back here and deposit it back into the bank. And so that whole sign over your paycheck back to the org thing lasted about an hour. And then I had to go around like a, with my tail between my legs and give everybody their checks back that they,
but regardless, I mean, I don't want to set up the picture that people were getting paid.
No,
that, money in Scientology.
We were making a few hundred dollars for 110 hours of work a week, which is basically slave labor. I mean, if you compare what Sea Org members make in the United States, it's actually less than what people consider slave labor in China. Sea Org members work more hours a week and they're paid less and they get less time off than what is internationally considered slave labor. That's how a Sea Org member makes about 35 cents an hour. That's the average wage of a Sea Org member. Mm-hmm. Based on the hours they work and based on the amount of pay they get. And so, in China, it's 40 cents an hour is the average slave wage.
So, Mark, so despite all that, you found your way to the international gold base, which is the top executive strata of Scientology lived and worked with David Miscavige in Hemet, California, or River. What is it? Riverside is Hemet.
Gilman Hot
Springs.
Don't say
it's Hemet.
Don't say
Hemet
or San Jacinto.
Go. What is
Gilman,
it?
It's Gilman Hot Springs.
Okay.
In Riverside County.
In Riverside County. If you don't, the Hemet people and the San Jacinto people, they're very specific about Hemet and San Jacinto not being the same, but they're more like Scientology is not in our city, period. Yes. And the only reason I even got to that headquarters place is because a girl that I was friends with at Delphi, she worked at the Int base and she put my name on a list. And that's how I ended up there.
So you ended up at the international base and you ran the studios there. You were promoted to the AV producer at Gold and the director of AV systems, responsible for the AV systems for all organizations and missions. And you were there for how long, Mark? How long were you there?
I was there for 15 years, from 1990, and I left in January of 2005.
You escaped, and you wrote a book called Blown for Good, and we'll put that up on our website.
Awesome.
You escaped with the help of, ironically, the help of the Sheriff's Department there, right?
Riverside County Sheriff's Department. Yes, they helped me escape because somebody called 911. That's really the...
So we could just quickly just run through this. Mark, you and your wife, Claire Headley, lived somewhat off the base of this base.
We lived next to it. We lived right next to it in a house.
And you were on your motorcycle. You escaped. They came after you. They hit you with their SUV. Somebody saw that, called 911. The sheriff's department responded. You didn't tell him what happened. There's reasons why. You just wanted to get out of there. Understood. I know you busted your balls about this because you could have had them. And I'm like, oh my God, you could have had them. I know, but I can say that for 1,000 moments in Scientology
I was 8 seconds out.
I get it. But they did hit you in your car. They did hit you.
They ran me off the road. One, I was on a motorcycle, escaping on a motorcycle. The security guards in their SUV ran me off the road, and somebody saw that and called 911.
All right. And the sheriff's department helped you. They asked you who did it. You just said, I just want to go. I just want to get out of here. And they assisted you to get to ultimately your dad, who wasn't.
They knew that I was trying to escape, even though I didn't tell them I was trying to escape. So they basically called me on it and said, listen, I told them a song and dance. I'm just trying to go to my dad. They said, listen, where are you trying to get to? I said, I'm trying to get to the U-Haul in San Jacinto. And they said, great, we're going to call for backup and we're going to escort you there. One car in front and one car behind you. We're going to drive you to that U-Haul.
Right.
And while doing that, the two different Scientology operatives tried to follow us. And they ended up pulling them over on two separate incidents and telling them, you're impeding with the police investigation. Stop following this guy. And that was a guy by the name of Bruce Wagner in a Honda Acura. Mm-hmm. And another woman by the name of Muriel Dufresne, who is the kind of like the Keystone Cops PR girl, gal at the international base. And she's actually the one that tipped them off, because I was giving them the whole song and dance like, oh, I'm just trying to go see my dad. There's no problem. These guys and I, we just had a misunderstanding. And then she pulls up while the cop's actually talking to me and says, what's wrong with Mark? And the cop recognized her from being from the Scientology headquarters. And then he immediately was like, oh, this guy's trying to escape. And so he said, nothing's wrong, ma'am. Go ahead, move along. And as soon as she drove off, that's when he said, dude, where are you trying to get to? And I said, I'm trying to get to the U-Haul. He's like, okay, good. Let's get you there. Like, let's cut through all the nonsense. You're trying to escape. We're going to help you.
And Muriel is the person that infamously said in one of those interactions with the police, you can leave anytime you want.
Yeah. You can. Oh, I mean, you can, and if we happen to run you over, well, you know, whatever. But
This is the classic lie that is told about Sea Org members, that they can, you know, they're free to leave whenever they want. And anybody who has been in the Sea Org, and particularly anybody who has been at the international base, knows just what a complete, absolute, outrageous lie that is.
Yeah, they were like chasing the Predator.
Exactly. They weren't chasing Mark down in an SUV and driving him off the road because he was free to leave whenever he wanted.
Yeah. Leah, when for the 15 years I was there, I would say, I don't know, 200 people escaped. It was escaping was a pretty regular occurrence, like so much so that like David Miscavige would get let known each day who'd escaped that day or if someone had escaped that day. It was like it was a regular conversation. And so you knew if you left, you knew they were coming after you. You knew they were going to go to the bus stations. You knew they were going to go to the airport. You knew they were going to go to your relative's house. You knew they were going to go to the friends you have. And when you sign up in the Sea Org, and I never realized this until afterwards because I was so naive and oblivious, but when you fill out your life history form to join the Sea Org, you give them your mother's maiden name. You give them every address you've ever lived at. You give them all of the info that they would need to get into your phone, your bank, your credit card. You give them all of that info, mother's maiden name, date of birth, social. They have everything. So they can very easily find you if you have a bank card. Not a lot of people did. If you have any kind of relatives, they have all of that information. And within a matter, I would say within an hour, they pretty much have a list of everywhere that you could possibly go once you leave.
Right.
And they send people to all of those locations. It doesn't matter if it's in San Francisco or if it's in San Diego or if it's in Kansas
City. It doesn't matter
City.
If it's in St. Lucia. I mean, they're going to.
It didn't matter if it was in South Africa. Scientology
has unlimited amount of, you know, tax exempt money at their discretion. Go ahead, Mark.
This is another thing a lot of people don't know. They also, at the Ant Base, they have their own travel agent who has access to all the airlines. He can get you a ticket to anywhere from anywhere on any airline possible.
And he also probably knows who he probably has information.
He does. And people say, well, that's impossible. He doesn't have information. Well, yeah, you know what he doesn't have? He doesn't have the first name. He can see the last name. That's all they need to see is the last name.
What were you going to say, Mike?
I was going to say this absolutely is the case. Airline reservations 100% are available. And people say, well, you know, you can't walk into a travel agent and they're not going to tell you who else, you know, you can't walk into a travel agent and say, does Mark Heavily have a reservation from Denver to Washington, D.C. next week? And they're going to say, are you kidding me? We're not telling you that. Well, they could if they wanted to.
If they were a Scientologist, they would tell you in a second.
They have access to Sabre, which is the airline reservations computerization system.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, I know people ask that too. Why? Have you told the authorities? Yes, Mike has told the authorities this. Yes, Mark Heavily, Claire Heavily, they have all told the authorities of the abuses and the criminal activities that have gone on in the Church of Scientology since it was born and invented.
Yeah. So either way, you knew what was going to happen when you left. And through the times that I was there, they have a thing called the blow drill. Yeah. So if a blow is an unauthorized departure, that's the Scientology term for when you leave without approval, they call it a blow. And there, I think I made a list one time. It was like 50 people who had blown and were gotten back from that blow drill. So they escaped, and then a week later, poof, you see them and I'm assuming digging weeds out on the property for the next 2 years.
And I'm assuming the reason why they're so concerned with people, especially leaving the gold base or any secretive base of Scientology, is because of the things that you guys have witnessed and experienced.
Totally. 100%.
The beatings, the abuse.
Also just the secret crazy Scientology stuff. Like, that was the thing that I found most fascinating, is that I would start telling Scientologists these stories after I escaped. They would say, like, well, you know, I can't believe you're not sorting this out. And I'd be like, sorting it out? Like, you have this idea that everyone in Scientology follows Scientology policies.
Exactly.
The only people that are made to follow the Scientology policies are the Scientologists, the public, the paying people. At the Int base, there's no Scientology policy being followed on a day-to-day
basis.
That's
what was the most shocking to me too.
You would tell me, like, the policy says this, and I would always
and
be
I'm like, what are
Leah?
You? Yeah, I know.
Like, Leah, you keep talking about the policy. Nobody gives a shit about the policy. And you'd be like, well, aren't people writing knowledge reports? I'd be like, Leah, a knowledge report hasn't been written at the Int base for many years. And even if they're written, they're never read or acted on. It's just a giant waste of paper. But Scientologists would hear these stories and they'd be like, I can't believe that Ray Midoff is being beat up. Oh, yeah, Ray Midoff was, I mean, it wasn't beat up as much as Mike, but he was beat up a lot. He was picked on, maybe he might even have been picked on even more than Mike. But I don't know. I wasn't there for all those meetings because I was in gold. So I would see these guys being beaten up, and I was in a lower organization. And that was, for a long time, they kept this appearance up for the international organizations that they were all high and mighty. And if you were in gold, you were the scum of the fucking base. You were shit. And you were like, you were lowlives. But if you were in the CMO, the Commodore's Messenger Org, or you were in international management, well, you guys were the ass kickers. And if you were in RTC, I mean, the sun might as well have shone out of your ass. I mean, it did. Yeah. It was, that was sort of like the hierarchy. But then in the 90s, I would say in the late 90s, David Miscavige, he just started talking shit about everybody. If they were in RTC, if they were in international, he didn't give a shit. It was like, everyone sucks and everyone is a suppressive and every single person at this property is trying to kill me. And you're like, whoa. Like, he thinks Mike Rinder is an SP. Guillaume Lesev is an SP. Like, he's actually writing to them as suppressive Mike Rinder. Like, that document was sent to Mike Rinder, and I was CC'd on it, and it said, Mike Rinder, suppressive. And you're like, is this reality? Like, this is insanity. And then at the same time, you're going like, why is he writing to a suppressive? If he's suppressive, like Dave Miscavige is writing to people saying, this is what I want you to do. Like, here are the action items for you for this week or this month. Use suppressives. Like, you're like, if he's a suppressive, he should be the fuck out of here. Why is he writing to them? Like, right. It just, so that world was so insanely crazy.
Yes.
That, yes, of course, if anyone told what they saw at that place to a Scientologist, yes, they would not be a Scientologist. That's pretty
much. I don't know about that. Because
one for one, every single person that I've talked to that was a Scientologist that I've spent 2 hours talking to, they're not a Scientologist at the end.
That we're in?
Yes, I've.
Well, good for you.
Leah, I was doing a job for a sports bar in Santa Monica, and I was doing all this work for them. And Scientology, this is after I left, and Scientology would send PIs to my clients to fuck with them. And they would try to basically make me look like I was hiring thieves that escaped from, because when I left, I kind of isolated. The thing you need when you first leave, you need a job and you need a place to stay. That's the two things you need. And maybe a vehicle, depending on how my philanthropy is doing. You need a vehicle too. Those three things are the things you need to kind of get back on your feet. And so I was hiring, I probably hired 30 people that escaped from Scientology.
Right.
And I would hire them and I'd have them do work for me. And then Scientology would come to the places of business that I was doing a job for. And they'd say, have you seen this guy? He escaped, or he stole a bunch of stuff from Scientology and then left. And so I was doing this sports bar and there was four owners. And they said, hey, these guys came by today looking for this kid that you got working for you. And I said, oh, Jesus. And until this time, my past Scientology life and my new life had not really crossed over. So I said, listen, I want to meet with you guys. I got to tell you some stuff. And I sat down with the four owners and I said, I used to work at Scientology's headquarters in the desert at the secret compound. And I escaped with the help of police. And now I'm sort of kind of like an underground railroad whistleblower slash just pain in their ass. And all three of them looked at one of the owners who was a Scientologist. He was Elizabeth Moss's twin at CC.
Oh my God. Meaning her.
He was her student
partner
at the Celebrity Center in Hollywood. This guy, he was an actor. He was on TV shows. He's been in all kinds of stuff. And he was the owner of a sports bar in Santa Monica. And he was like, he was in disbelief. He was like, dude, you're awesome. You've been working for us. I can't believe you're a suppressive. And I was just like, dude, I'm like, I could be top 10 right now, cool. Like currently a living SP, you know, but, this is pre Mike Rinder too. There were no Mike Rinders. There were no Leahs floating around. It was just us OGs, as you say. Anyway, yeah. but I spent 2.5 hours talking to him and that was it. He was done. He hasn't.
Well, you're baby OGs because there was some.
That's true. You got
before
like,
you.
I know.
Before you. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They ain't here with us right
who
now.
Who were really on their own.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Really yeah, like Paulette.
Yeah, Paulette Cooper. Yeah. Well, yeah, but I'm OG X in base. That's
yes, exactly. That's exactly yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. You
anyway,
are.
And
so what happened, Mark?
So he left. That was it. And then he started dishing too. He's best friends with Tom Cruise's agent and. I was like, he was telling me stories from like last week in Scientology kind of thing.
But he left Scientology after.
He did. Right after that. That was it. He never went back.
Amazing.
Good
but,
job.
But either way,
it wasn't, I didn't talk. And this is my system, however you want to say, right or wrong. My system is not to attack the philosophy of Scientology. Mm. You can never win because Scientology programs you as soon as you start talking about the philosophy or the policies or any of that, their blinders go up. They go, no, squirrel. Yeah. They can't talk about that. Don't talk about that. Just talk about the actual crimes and the wrong and the things that are not per the Scientology policies and not per the philosophy that they're doing. And David Miscavige beating the shit out of people and torturing people and throwing fat, overweight, old people into swimming pools, just all that kind of stuff, that just blows their mind. And there's no way to There's no way for their circuitry that they've been programmed in Scientology. There's no way for them to override that. And
well,
also,
none of that worked. None of that worked, Mark, on my friends when I was in, and I was saying, guys, this is what's going on. Like the Mike Rangers of the world are leaving, and they're claiming they're being beaten. And
well, here's the only other
Shelly hasn't been seen, and I wrote standard reports. I was told to write in Scientology. I did that.
Well, here's the only thing where my system falls apart, and that's when you start getting into the business relationships and the family relationships. So you were very lucky that you somehow left and you kept your family, your close family.
Yeah.
A lot of people who've been in for a long time, there's no way for them to do that. And if that is a, if that's a button or if that's some weakness that they have that they cannot leave with and leave their family, well, then that there's no way around that. There's those people in their heart of hearts could be like, I know Scientology is the most horrible thing ever, but I can't leave my kids. I can't leave my kids. And that's the part.
But they already have.
I understand.
That's the part that's so
And that's
so
what I try to explain to them. And as I go, when's the last time you went on a vacation and just did a road trip across the United States?
When was the last time you
kids?
Gave a real shit about your own child?
Exactly. When's the last time? When's the last time you were like part of the PTO and you like were making sure the kids were, you know, you're when you become a Scientologist, you become another version of yourself that doesn't have a family. So you're not, you don't see your kids. You don't care about your kids.
Yeah. I don't.
And
I
if
don't
you
think
do
it's,
care
I
about your kids,
family.
You should get them out of Scientology.
Exactly. But I don't think it's the family per se, your daughter, your son. I think it's Scientology as a collective.
Yeah, and the business relationships, friends, and
exactly,
and also, and a lot of, and where you live, it's also all about appearances, and in L.A. So if your friend is, you know, Melinda Blackstone or whatever, and she's got all these connections, I know I'm saying her name wrong, but if she's got all these connections, she's going to lose if she stays your friend. Well, she's not going to be your friend anymore. And that's the shitty thing about Scientologists is they are loyal to a fault with Scientology most of the time. But if you can show them, how supporting Scientology is just basically a horrible thing to do, and that really you got to make a sacrifice. You have to sacrifice.
Here's the thing,
Mark. You have to make a sacrifice so that we can end this thing called Scientology. If that doesn't mean, if that means I can't talk to my mom and my sister, well, but it's for the, for everybody in Scientology, not just for my mom and sister. This is bigger than Mike and Leah and Mark. This, we're talking about thousands of people's lives that are being ruined.
Agreed. I agree. And I was going to bring that up, Mark, when you left, your mother and sister, and half brother all disconnected from you. Right. So you have, your mother doesn't know her grandchildren, your brother doesn't know, your sister doesn't know her nieces, her nephews.
I haven't seen my brother or my sister since 2005 or talked to them ever once. My sister called my dad last year. My dad passed away last December, and my sister hadn't spoken to him in 15 years. And she talked to him on the phone for 20 minutes the day before he passed away.
Right.
And that was the only contact she had with him since he helped me. He didn't do anything. He didn't even say anything about Scientology. He just helped me escape. That was it. That was his crime.
Well, he didn't help you escape, Mark. He helped you with somewhere to live.
Yes, he helped.
When you escaped. Yes, after you escaped.
He helped me escape to somewhere.
And for that, your sister wouldn't talk to him.
Yeah, my sister or my mother. And actually, we went to a funeral, my uncle's funeral, my mom's brother. And at that funeral, she told her family that if Stephanie, my sister Stephanie, or my mom talked to Claire, myself, or my dad, Bernie, that they would be risking mankind's future eternity. I mean, her family don't have anything to do with Scientology. They That was a hard pill to swallow for them. They're like, what? If you talk to Mark, mankind's future eternity is at stake?
I want to, for everybody at home, don't think of Mark's mother as just kind of the exception. Well, that's Mark's mm-hmm. mother. She's an extremist. Scientologists believe this wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Yeah. And they told, when I first started talking out about Scientology, mainly in 2006, I was just writing about things. Like, I was just correcting stuff on the internet. Like, I would mm-hmm. read these things, just crazy things. Like,
yeah.
Oh, they have secret spaceships at their headquarters in Gilman Hot Springs. And, you know, just ridiculously crazy stuff. And I'd be like, listen, I don't know about spaceships. I worked there for 15 years. I didn't see any spaceships except for the ones we built to shoot in a movie or something. But I was just saying people are getting beat up. I wrote this story about musical chairs. And that one, that got a lot of traction. And that actually was a very good story to show Scientologists, listen, this musical chairs thing, that ain't got nothing to do with policy. You can read the musical chairs policy. There's a policy that L. Ron Hubbard it called musical chairs when you move people around in Scientology on their posts, and it destabilizes the organizations when you do that. Well, yeah, no, this game of musical chairs, he did kind of give
and
some
is this
kind
the
of
story you're talking about that was
in Going
it ended up being in the Going in the Lawrence Wright book, which then also was highlighted in the Going Clear movie on HBO. But he basically played a game of musical chairs with all of the international management staff members, Sea Org members, and whoever was left at the end of the game could stay there with him and rebuild, quote unquote, Scientology.
What a prize.
And everyone else was going to get sent off to the worst possible Scientology
organization. I would be purposely falling over myself, tripping myself, going anything.
Not if you saw these toilets. Not if you saw these pictures of these toilets he showed us in Canada.
This story was told in Going Clear. I don't want to go over it again.
Yeah. Either way, he was going to split every. And if you were married, he was going to split you up. It was just a horrible torture session.
Right.
But that was
the everyday at the Gold.
Yes,
Gate.
That was Tuesday.
Right.
You would go if you went to a meeting. Mike can back this up. If you went to a meeting with David Miscavige. The very possibility you're walking out with a Band-Aid on somewhere in your body. And if he didn't physically attack you personally, he would throw shit at you. Like, he'd have these manila file folders with papers and VHS cassettes and all kinds of weird stuff, binder clips in them. And you could get one of those hurled at you. Just you're not even paying attention. You could just be like staring out the window and you could just get boom right up against the side of the head with a file folder with a VHS package in it. And that was an every single day occurrence. If you went to a meeting and there was not a physical altercation, that was a good meeting. No one got beat up in that meeting. So Mark,
you escaped, like I said, in 2005, and you wrote a book, Bloating for Good, about growing up in Scientology and leaving Scientology. But so you left.
Yeah.
What happened to you when you left and you started speaking out?
So when I started posting, on the internet under the name Blown for Good, because I told you they would get people back. And I was like, no, you ain't getting me back. Right. So they started posting, and there was a very big program to figure out who this Blown for Good guy was. And I would post kind of things that would think like, oh, that's going to get them off my scent a little, because I know they're going to figure it out. They have ways of doing this, but I'm going to try and keep the ruse going as long as possible. And they actually were starting to pull in people that in my circle. So I had a bunch of ex-Scientology friends that had also left from the Int base, and my wife, and we were kind of like a little group. And I was actually starting to recruit more people. Like, I would be like, hey, dude, I tracked down Jeff Hawkins. Holy shit, let's invite him to our party. Hey, I tracked down Amy Scobie. Let's have her come to our SP party. And we'd have these parties every few months called an SP party. And we would just start collecting more and more people. And each time we'd find somebody, they'd know two people. Well, this pissed Scientology off to no end. And we actually had, I would say, at least three or four SP parties that OSA, the Office of Special Affairs, the Dirty Tricks Bureau of Scientology, they had people that were my friends that were working for OSA to basically report up on the party. And so I started to see and like notice things like, that's a little weird. And when you leave, when you're an ex-Scientologist and you leave Scientology and you start telling stories and, oh, people are following me, everyone's like, this dude is so crazy paranoid. All these ex-Scientologists are just paranoid. And I would be like, no, I swear, I think somebody's following me. I get this weird feeling. There are always people following me. Anyway, and then there was this weird guy that was around our neighborhood. I was invited to go to an international conference in Hamburg, Germany, to talk to a group of European Union police forces and their equivalent of like the FBI and law enforcement for all of Europe. So Denmark and Germany and Italy, all these guys, France. And when I went there, I went with a guy named Jason. And when we were at the airport to leave from LAX, we got given these flyers, the big broadsheets. And it was basically a picture of Jason and a picture of me. And it was all the horrible stuff all these horrible things about us. Unfortunately, it was in German, so I couldn't read it. I was like, that's a good picture, but I don't know about any of this stuff you wrote because I don't speak of the German. Anyway, and then I sort of thought, okay, I'm definitely on their radar. They definitely know it's me. They definitely know I'm up to no good. And when Jason and I were waiting in the lounge at the airport, I said, those two dudes right there, those are our PIs. I said, I bet you money they sit either right in front of us or right behind us on the plane. And sure enough, they sat right behind us the entire way to Germany. Mm-hmm. When we got to Germany, we were booked at a hotel by the German, basically like the Secret Service of the German government is the one who booked our hotel. When we came down for breakfast in the morning at the hotel that the German Secret Service booked, those two PIs were sitting at the breakfast table right across from us.
Mm-hmm. Well, they could have followed you. The airport. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, but either way, we had – so since about – I'd say about 2006, I've had PIs, private investigators hired by lawyers of Scientology, following me, taking my kids to school, at the supermarket. Anytime one of these SP parties happened, they had people in there. And funnily enough – when Mike Rinder left, did you leave in 2007, Mike?
Yep.
When he left in 2007, he found some thumb drive kicking around. And he's like, hey, Mark, I found this thumb drive on it. It's got your dossier in it. I was like, my what? And he had all of the communications between OSA and RTC about who Blown for Good is, about Mark's birthday party coming up, who we've got going to go into the party. They had three different people going to my party that didn't know the other two people were spies for them to report up on anything that was said or done. They had set up fake business opportunities for me to go and bid on a job that then they would claim me of doing incorrect and then sue me.
Right.
They had an entire lawsuit drawn up by Ken Moxon and OSA of suing me for telling all the secrets that I knew about the Imp Base and all the notes. Like, we can't say this. We need this data to become overt. It's covert information. Like, they had a whole list of covert information that they had gathered and on their plans to make it overt information. They had my phone records, Leah, who I called, who I talked to, how long I talked to them in summarized pages for months.
And this is on top of creating a hate website on you, having family.
No, this was on top of harassing me, not letting me talk to my family, sending me and my wife a bill for, I think it was $153,000, saying that we owed them for all the training and all the interrogations I got on their Easy Bake lie detector
at their request.
Yeah, at their insistence.
Yes. On top of working for them for 15 years and so, making $30,000.
So you said I was making it sound good. I worked 110 hours a week for 15 mm-hmm. years. I got paid a total of $29,000 for the entirety of that 15 years. The first 6 months after I escaped, I made more in 6 months, phoning it in, by the way. I was working 3 hours a day on some days. I made more in 6 months than I made in 15 years working for Scientology. And now,
you know, I'm only pointing out, Mark, that they actually had the balls to hand you a bill. And so how long did the harassment, I mean, has the harassment ended? I mean, here we are, we're 2021.
Yeah.
Finally left you alone, Mark, after harassing you, your wife, your children? Because the same with Claire. I mean, your wife, all of her family disconnected.
Yeah.
You know, the grandparents don't have relationships with their with their sons and daughters and their grandchildren. Destroyed your relationship with your dad. Thank God he was there for you and you were there for him. And I'm so glad that you had your time together before his passing.
Yeah.
But this is, I mean, it just never ends with Scientology. I mean, listen, I could Google your name right now, Mark. I could pull up your website.
Yeah.
You and Claire. I mean,
is markheadley.com.
Uh-huh.
And they pay for that. They pay to make that the top search result. And they've been paying Google for that since, I would say, 2006, 2007. Mm-hmm. But I don't have the hundreds and hundreds of domains that you and Mike have, but I might have 10, mm-hmm. but yeah, my dad actually, he would keep up with the sites. Like he would say, oh, there's a new video up on you. Now, to full disclosure, I have never, ever been to my hate website that Scientology has created because I know it's really just for me. They don't care if anybody else goes to it. They really want me to go to it and watch the videos. I've never watched a video. I've never been to the site. But my dad would go to it all the time, and I would say, Dad, it's just a bunch of nonsense. He's like, I know, but it's the only chance I have to see your sister because she's doing hate videos on there. And
that's sad, actually.
I know. It was, but he could get it. He could see her from this year or whenever it was. He could see videos of her and what she looked like currently, and he could see her talking, and he could kind of get the essence of her, but that was the only way he could see her was to go to my hate website. And he came to me one time. This was last year, actually. He came to me, says, hey, your mom put up a video about you. And I said, oh, great. I said, you know, Dad, I don't go to that because, you know, I don't want to get riled up. And I know whatever they're saying on there is crazy. He goes, well, you got to hear it, though. And I said, okay, Dad, I'll humor you. What did I do now? He goes, you tried to drown your mom when you were 7 years old. And I said, what? He goes, yeah. Evidently, you were in the pool and you tried to drown her when you were 7. And I was like, well, first of all, I have a 7-year-old. If he tried to drown me, I would just stand there. So I don't really know. And I don't even know how my 7-year-old would try to drown me, but okay, fine. But I would always tell him, Dad, don't go to the site.
I know.
But he had to go to see my sister. He didn't care. He wanted to see her, whether she was talking shit or not. But and that's how he kept up with her over the years, was to watch her doing hate videos on me on my website. And then he, like I said, she did call him. And we even then, she called him and spoke to him. We were in the hospital with him, and all of my cousins and his sisters and we have a huge family here in Colorado, and they all came and saw him and went through, and it was a big deal. And he called his sisters on the phone, and when my sister called, we were all so happy because he got diagnosed with cancer in 2004, lung cancer. And then again in 2014, he was diagnosed with lung cancer, and he was given 3 months to live in 2014. And then he outlived that expectation, obviously. But then I want to say a few years later, he was diagnosed with brain cancer, and they gave him 3 months to live then as well. And he outlived that, and he just kept going. And we really did think the only thing keeping him around was the desire to be able to talk to my sister again. And so he did keep stuck around for a lot longer, but they basically stole my sister from him for no good reason whatsoever. And at least he got to talk to her for 20 minutes the day before he passed. But that's just every day in Scientology. They don't,
it means nothing to them.
And she didn't come to the funeral. My mom didn't come to the funeral. They didn't send flowers. They didn't send a card, nothing. She talked to him for 20 minutes and then it was just like, you're out. And even that 20 minutes, he kind of played it down.
Hope you'll get it right next time.
Yeah.
Find your way back to Scientology.
Yeah. And my dad was nice to a fault too.
He wouldn't say, stop this fucking bullshit.
He would always err on the side of, you know, she's not saying it. It's someone's telling her to say it. It's not her. It's Scientology, you know. So it is what it is.
And he's not wrong in that either. I mean, again, this is, you know, Scientology parents handing their children over to Scientology. What do you expect?
Yeah.
No. But at the end of the day, they choose Scientology.
They collected my trash every week. When we moved from California to Colorado, they had people in cars with cameras hanging out of the windows, filming us in the moving truck, driving. They followed us for maybe an hour or two out of Los Angeles, just driving in a moving truck.
But
they filmed us driving in a moving truck.
So what is this? What is all of this? Get them. I mean, at the end of the day, destroying someone's family, keeping grandparents from knowing their grandchildren. Where does spending millions and millions of dollars on, you know, following people and, you know, hiring PIs.
I think they just want to make an example for their parishioners. At the
end
of the day,
if
you leave, we're going to fuck your shit up.
You don't fuck our shit up, because guess what? Mark and Claire are happy. They have beautiful children. They created a life for themselves that is devoid of this hatred day in and day out from mankind.
That's what we try. You know, I'll tell you, Leah, there were periods where I went through in the early, early days after I left, where I went through mainly when we had a lawsuit where we were suing Scientology, and I was spending a lot of money to keep the lawsuit going and trying to keep my business going and having three boys and everything else. And there were periods that I would go through like a bit of a depression, and no matter what, I would put on a good show and a happy face. To make it like, no, Scientology's not winning. You know, I don't give a shit about their lawsuit.
Winning, Mark. I don't care if you were, you know, putting on a happy face.
I understand.
They still weren't winning.
Yes.
Even if they won legally. I mean, they have millions. They have
the
top-notch lawyers in every state on retainer.
Even in the end, because we sued them, there was a ton of information that made it into the public domain.
Exactly.
Stuff that they did that is legally on file. And there was another lawsuit. There was a bunch of lawsuits that were filed at the same time as ours. Like people, I basically said, hey, if this happened to you, you might have a case. You should talk to a lawyer. And so there were several lawsuits that got filed. And one of those lawsuits, they did end up settling with those people. And those people did get a good chunk, I assume, out of Scientology. But no matter what, the word got out about the beatings, and a lot of those things became deposed facts that, like, these people said this in a legal document, so it could be reported on, it could be, movies can be made, books can be written. And then also, when we lost, we had to pay them. I think they sent us, they actually sent us a letter. We couldn't believe it. They sent us a letter saying, listen, you owe us $55,000 in legal fees. They fast-tracked this thing so that it got approved by the court. And they said, if you don't pay this, we're going to aggressively collect. Like, we're going to try to take your house, take your vehicles, and whatever we can. But if you spy for us, if you become a spy for OSA and talk about all the communications you have with Mike Rinder and Marty Rathbun and turn over the rights to my book, if I do all these things, then they will forgive the $55,000. And I just said, sent them a big F you and a check for $55,000. And
I mean, that's pretty amazing, Mark.
And then, but this is the best part. And I want to say this because there's a lot of people that helped. We did my friend Jason said, there's no way you should pay that 55 G's. I said, I already paid it. I already wrote him a check. He said, well, you should do a fundraiser, one of those GoFundMe things. And you should say, let's get that money back. In 1 week, we got $55,000 on GoFundMe. Yeah. And we got, so the 55 that we paid, we were made completely whole again. And we got the money back from just people, a lot of anonymous people, but a lot of people that are, you know, still fighting Scientology to this day, threw in a 50 or a 20 or a 100 or a 1,000 or whatever. But, and that was also got a lot of good airtime and press and kind of got the word out that, you know, even after they sent us the bill and they stole 15 years and the whole, my whole childhood and everything else, they were like, nope, we need another 55K out of you before we're going to let this one go. But yeah, they're relentless. They don't, I don't think there's any way that Scientology is going to get shut down unless people just keep talking about what their experiences were, what they're doing. And one of the ways that we found to be able to do that is when the people do leave, if they're vulnerable and they have no place to go, Scientology has this really good system of keeping them in the fold, even though they're basically disgruntled and hate Scientology. They rely on their support system of their Scientology business or friends or whatever. So if you give people some basically resources to be able to escape Scientology and to leave, then it's a better chance that they're going to tell their story, because Scientology actually sent a group of people around to anyone and everyone who ever left the INT base. They went around, they hunted these people down, and they said, listen, whether they had talked out or not, they said, listen, we're going to give you a check for $25,000, but you got to sign these papers saying that you will never talk about Scientology for the rest of your life.
Right.
And that is arguably, that's a more legal document than whatever paperwork you sign when you're in Scientology. When you receive a payment from somebody and say you won't do something, it's a little bit more binding in some places than if you just say, yeah, I'm not going to say anything, and you don't have a lawyer and you don't even know what you're signing. But
go ahead.
I was going to say the Aftermath Foundation is a foundation that a bunch of us ex-Scientologists are part of, and we use that to help people get back on their feet if they do escape from Scientology and have nowhere to go or nowhere to turn. We can help them out with a place to stay or a job, or, I mean, we've had volunteers all over the world that are like, if anyone needs anything, we're here. Like,
no, I know.
It's insane. There have been
people offering psychiatrists, therapists, psychologists, people offering their homes, saying if any Scientologist in this area needs a place to stay, a job.
Yeah. Like, people that own chains and chains of restaurants.
It's such a beautiful thing to see.
I'll give anybody a job. I don't care if they have been in the Sea Org their whole life and they only know Scientology. I'll still hire them.
And I want to say, and I say this to people often, like, you know, if you encounter a person who's in Scientology in the Sea Organization, because they are walking down the street, not people from the gold base where David Miscavige was and where you guys were, but you know, you see local churches of Scientologies and you see the people walking around in the uniforms. They're Sea Org members. Or yeah. In Florida, in Clearwater, Florida, they're getting off the buses. I mean, you know exactly who they are. And I say, please don't ridicule them.
Yeah. That's not productive at all. Yeah, that's not productive.
And direct them to the Aftermath Foundation because they can help them. And that's what I tell people. If you see it, if you see them, please try to help them, get them out. And the Aftermath Foundation is a beautiful thing that you guys started and I love talking about it, and we should talk about the bobblehead. Now, the bobblehead was originally, it wasn't even a thing. It was just a pretended bobblehead. Scientology had a bobblehead?
Yes, they made a bobblehead, Leah.
That's right. They also made a marionette of all of you, right, Mike?
So in the days when we would do international events, we did 7 events a year all over the world for Scientology. And at these events, you'd have speakers like Mike Rinder, Ray Midoff, Mark Yeager, Guillaume Lesev, Heber Jens.
These are all the top executives. By the way, have not been seen right along with Shelley Miscavige. Go ahead.
Yeah. And they also, by the way, have all their own hate sites all ready to go. You know that?
No.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
All those guys,
names are all registered.
They already have all their domains. So they have a Who Is Mike Rinder site that's got stuff on it. Well, they have a Who Is Mark Yeager site ready to go. If he jumps over the fence, they just push a button and his site's up and running. But David Miscavige would make fun and ridicule these guys while they were on stage rehearsing for these events. He would make fun of them full time. He would talk shit to Heber and he would call Ray Midoff Gumby. Gumby.
No, Heber was Howdy Doody.
Howdy Doody was Heber, yeah. Ray Midoff was Gumby, and Mark Yeager was Q-Ball because he was bald. He would make fun of them, but the making fun of them got really old. And he'd already said what he'd said so many times. So he actually had professional marionettes made, like commissioned. I don't know. If you could get your hands on that Mike Rinder one, that thing would be invaluable. It was it was amazing. It was amazing.
And so he made bobbleheads.
When you guys did the Aftermath show and Mike was the co-host, they were trying to say, well, he'll just say whatever Leah wants him to say.
He just stands there and nods.
So they made a bobblehead. Like you can pay somebody $150 to make you a bobblehead. Maybe $300. Anyway, they made a bobblehead of Mike Rinder and it's just sitting there shaking his head. Well, as soon as I saw that bobblehead, I was like, well, first of all, it's wearing a sweater. I ain't never seen Mike Rinder wear a sweater. So I was like, he doesn't dress like that. And it wasn't a really good likeness of him, but it was okay. I was like, I could totally knock that out of the park. I can make one way better, make Mike look like $1 million, sell those for $30, and we can make a bunch of money for the Aftermath Foundation. Well, we made 1,000. We sold out of those bobbleheads in a few weeks. They were gone. And we did make a lot of money for the Aftermath Foundation. And so after many requests and many people pleading with me that they didn't get one, blah, 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 we made a new batch. So we have another – it's a bobblehead. It's 8 inches tall. It's got Mike Rinder. He's wearing a nice – the photo that was taken from the Aftermath TV show promotion photos or something. And it's a Mike Rinder bobblehead. It says Mike Rinder on the bottom of it.
Well, I love it. I think it's amazing. And we're going to put the link on our website.
SPshop.com is where you can buy them. And if you already have a Mike Rinder bobblehead, you can get an SP bracelet. So
what's an SP?
Scientology. Yeah. They have these things when you get to this level called clear on the bridge to total freedom.
I still have mine, by the way, my clear.
You get a bracelet that says clear and
it has a number on the back.
I'm telling you, the clears are measurable. There's like a few thousand of them. You can keep track of that. There's too many SPs to keep track of. We can't be numbering the bracelets. So
to remind everybody, SP means suppressive person, which means enemy of Scientology.
That's
so go ahead. You have SP bracelets that are
SP
like the
SP bracelets. They're 30 bucks. Bobblehead's 30 bucks. Okay. All the profits go to the Aftermath Foundation. Awesome. When that person leaves and they got nowhere to go, Aftermath Foundation hooks them up. And we've helped a ton of people. And at first, we didn't even realize how many people we think would be coming. There's a lot of people that write in, and they have like a little thing they can fill out and say what they need and where they're at and what happened. And we have a lot of people send in requests. And because of people that either make straight donations, you can also just sign up for Amazon Smile and lift the Aftermath Foundation. So whenever you buy anything from Amazon, it just donates a portion to the Aftermath Foundation. We have people that do fundraisers on Facebook, but there's a lot of people that have donated. This is a way for you to get a little trinket, be part of the community of people that are, you know, speaking out about Scientology and help the Aftermath Foundation, which is really the only foundation I know of that exists for anything related to Scientology for people to escape. I don't think there's any other things set up for anybody to go to.
Which is why I applaud you guys, and it's a beautiful. Is it aftermathfoundation.com or what is the website name?
I think it's .org. The aftermathfoundation.org. But I'll include a link, of course.
Well, let's have an answer to that question. I mean, we're talking so highly of it.
Yeah, if you want to donate directly, you can go to theaftermathfoundation.org and just hit the donate button.
Thank you so much. Thank you for all the work that you do.
Thank you. You and Mike are, I've been doing this since 2006, but you guys have accomplished a lot more in a lot shorter amount of time. So hats off to you, Mark.
I'm going to disagree with you. You know, everybody's work that is involved in helping victims of Scientology, taking down Scientology in their own way. If you help one person, you've done everything for them. If you saved one family from this, you've done everything for them.
That's true.
I think we're all doing our part. Everybody's little part, big part, it all contributes to the bigger picture, which is we want to stop Scientology from doing what it's doing to people and families.
Yeah.
Yep. I think everybody who does anything, including contributing to the Aftermath Foundation, is a part of the bigger picture. And yes, there are some people who are more prominent, but that doesn't mean they're more important.
Correct. That's true. That's true. Like, you know, I was listening to that Stephanie Hutchison girl.
Amazing.
She is a firecracker. That is amazing. And you know, it's funny because when we were on the events, we knew, 99% of that stuff was bullshit that we say in the events and all the people that we're doing videos about. That never in a million years, I don't think Scientology thought anybody would fact check a single thing they ever said.
That's what I'm saying. This is not even a journalist. This is just a woman who was watching the show going, what the fuck is this?
If you just took a stack of all their event videos, DVDs, and just went through them, you could send 100 letters of video. And I'm sure, you know, 90 of them would come back. What? I didn't say that. You know, we didn't.
Yes. That's why we want people to understand, like, because they keep asking us, what can I do? Anything.
Totally.
Anything you do is helpful. You listening to this podcast is helpful. Supporting people who've left Scientology is helpful. Doing anything that you can do to contribute to the bigger picture, which is helping victims and helping to get the word out about Scientology by writing your congressmen and women, by getting involved yourselves in any way that you can, it's all helpful. And we cannot thank you enough for supporting us up to this point. And you've been amazing. So thank you to everybody. And again, thank you for listening. And Mark, we love you. We love Claire Moore.
It's okay. She answers the phone. She answers emails and the phone. So that's kind of, she's got the edge on me there.
But continued blessings, Mark. Honestly, you guys are so blessed, as are all of us who have been given a second chance at life, really. So continued success, Mark. Continued blessings. We love you.
Thank you. Love you guys, too. Keep rocking it into 2020.
And I want my bobblehead, Mark.
What?
I want my bobblehead.
Okay, talk to your people. Got to get through the firewall. A firewall of lawyers and managers.
You know what, Mark? Don't even say that shit because we have.
Goodness.
By the way,
can I get the? Did you show the pictures to Leah? Well, what exactly is the structure of the payments that will be made?
You're such a liar. By the way, we have the first 5 minutes of us talking before we actually started the podcast, where Mark said he has tried to do the bobblehead and he's done surveys and nobody knows who they're looking at.
Natalie Portman. I got Natalie Portman standing next to Mike Rinder, and I got Kate Beckinsale standing next to, and I got a moody, I don't know, somebody else. But yeah, no, I can't. We can't do it.
Well, it's not that hard.
It's not because
of me or my people.
But
your people.
My people. It's your me. People. The Bobblehead production unit is me, myself, and I. There's no other people involved.
Fucking flunk.
It's just, Leah, at the end of the day, they just can't capture your essence. There's so much, I don't know, explosive energy. Explosive energy there that they just can't. And also, I don't want that explosive energy bouncing back to me when you see these things.
You never
even saw that second one. I didn't even send it. I was like, Claire's like, you think we should send it to Leah? I was like, oh, no way.
But don't worry.
That ain't an email. She's going to call me if she sees that thing.
I am not upset at all being compared to Natalie Portman. I am absolutely fine with that.
They gave you raccoon eyes. Look at that.
Okay. Mike, take a picture of that. Mike, really, take a picture of that. And let's take a survey of people.
Okay, let me do this.
Is it me? Is it me?
Here. Okay. Here, do this one too.
Hold on.
It doesn't look anything like me other than the white suit.
Okay, I'm talking right now, and this is my attempt, my first and second. Well, there was a third attempt, but I'm not even going to show that one ever to anybody. But these are the attempts that actually got made. And like I said, Mike Rinder, he looks like a rock star. He looks better than his first one, but just because he's just a little tanner. Leah just does terrible. Not look like Leah. I don't know what to say. I can't do it. You know,
Mark, don't give up.
Well, it's just I didn't have enough time. And also, I'm paying for all this.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
This is out of my money. There's no bobblehead, SP bobblehead production fund. I'm paying for all this shit. So when I do a bobblehead that sucks, that's a few thousand bucks out of my pocket.
Oh, hell no. Oh, okay.
Yes.
No. All right. No.
Yes. No. I have to pay for these fuckers to fuck this shit up.
No, I don't want you to spend that money. All right. Anyway, Mark, thank you again so much. Love you guys.
Thank you for having me. Hopefully, I didn't talk too much, too long. You can do it, but it's all good. Awesome.
That's why we love you.
We have the same disease, Mark. Don't worry.
Yeah, diarrhea of the mouth.
No, it's a lot of information to get out.
Yes, but thank you for everything.
You were great, baby. Thank you so very much.
Okie doke.
Bye, buddy.
Babies. Bye, guys.